This week, we explore some haunted Masonic history, the Detroit Temple, Plano, Texas, and then we've got a great ghost story, a true story, by a close friend and brother, Chad Lasik. A stormy night at a Marine Corps air station in El Toro. Strange happenings make one of the men serving there remember something terrifying, and he recounts the tale to Chad, who then tells it to us. You're going to want to grab a blanket, maybe a flashlight, and, well, keep the lights on. And finally, I'll tell you two quick ghost stories of my own. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 615. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Without you, we're not able to make this show as awesome as it is. We've been your trusted Masonic source of awesome Masonic education and, of course, its kindred sciences since July of 2011. If you've been listening to the show any length of time and you're curious on how you can assist bring quality Masonic education to all those interested in the royal art, head on over to our website, wcypodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see the various options for you. We've also got a shop and a bookstore. Check it out. Well, first and foremost, I bet you're thinking this show's coming out late. Well, technically, yes. Or was I waiting to release this on Halloween? Since it's a Halloween-themed episode and all. No, it's late. I meant to get this out on Sunday, but of course, with all the happenings and things going on, I'm a little late. I do apologize, but we're going to say that I meant to release this on Halloween, which is why it came out on Halloween in 2023. And this is, of course, a Halloween episode. So, I'd like to go ahead and get started with the first section of this episode. Now, when one goes on Google and you type something like Freemasons and spookiness or Freemason Halloween, you're really going to get a very small list of fun articles. Such was the case recently when I did this for this episode. And when one filters out all of the goofy stuff out there and the tour sites where they'll take you on a haunted tour of a city and a Masonic lodge just happens to be on the list and all of that, you're left with some pretty interesting stuff. So the first thing I wanted to read was from the Detroit Historical Society's website, which is detroithistorical.org. And they had an article they published back in 2021, right around Halloween time, and it was called The Haunted History, The Masonic Temple. Let's check this out. Detroit's Masonic Temple, the largest in the world at roughly 12 million cubic feet, was designed by renowned local architect George D. Mason. The largest Masonic temple. The temple is an imposing Gothic structure at the corner of Bagg Street, later Temple Street, and 2nd Avenue across from Cass Park. Within its walls are a large cathedral, several chapels, two stylish ballrooms, hotel facilities, a library, a massive drill hall, and a 4,000-seat auditorium featuring the largest professional stage in the city. It was designed to accommodate over 40 individual Masonic lodges. The architect and mastermind behind the building was George D. Mason. George Mason was born in Syracuse, New York, in 1856, and in 1870, his family relocated to Detroit. In 1875, he began working for Hugh Smith, a local architect. He quickly switched to the firm of Henry T. Bush, where he took on the work of the George O. Robinson House, Detroit Public Library, and the Ransom Gills House. Mason broke from the firm, establishing Mason & Rice in 1878 with Zachariah Rice. From 1884 to 1896, Albert Kahn, who would become another famed Detroit architect, worked with him. Mason & Rice dissolved in 1898. And Mason continued to work on his own, establishing Mason & Company, building the Masonic. After Mason struck out on his own, he designed significant buildings in Detroit, like the Pontchartrain Hotel, Detroit Yacht Club, and Herman Kiefer Hospital. During this time, interest in Masonic fraternities was growing in Detroit. and the current spaces used by the various clubs in the city weren't large enough to support expanding membership. The fraternity purchased a block of land on Temple Street, formerly Bag Street, and contracted Mason to design the building. Mason broke ground on the temple on Thanksgiving Day in 1920, and in 1922, the first brick was laid using a trowel, a symbol often associated with the Masons. Used by George in 1926, the building was officially dedicated and opened to the public. The rumors. The Freemasons, the Masonic fraternity the temple was built for, are often regarded as a mysterious group with rumors swirling about our activities. But one rumor about the architect of the largest Masonic temple in the world is loud enough for us historians to hear out. Rumors are widely reported, even in news outlets, that George Mason overdid the spending on the construction of the temple, causing bankruptcy. The rumor even goes on to say that his wife left him because of it. And, as the story goes, Mason, distraught over the loss of his finances and his wife, died by suicide by jumping off the top of the 210-foot building. The story is sensationalized by guards, docents, and even event attendees claiming to see Mason's ghost climbing the stairs to his death, closing windows and stealing and hiding items. While the story makes for a great Halloween horror tale, it's not true. George Mason died in 1948 at 91 years old in his home in the Wilshire apartment building on Grand Boulevard. Maybe it's because the building was constructed for a secretive organization, because its imposing size dominates the neighborhood, but stories about the Masonic Temple and its haunted history reappear every year around Halloween. And while there might be ghosts hiding in the 1,037 rooms, we won't be the ones to prove it. And we'll stick with the historic facts. You can read more about the Masonic Temple in their Encyclopedia of Detroit article, which is linked in the article that we'll have in the show notes, and you can explore other spooky stories in their Haunted History blog series. So I have been to this temple, and I have to say, while certainly I would probably debunk anything about George Mason and haunting this building, but the building's been there for so long. It's so old, with its stonework, woodwork, a lot of organic pieces to the building, and its long history of hosting so many Masonic lodges and organizations and all of this, one is left to wonder, could it be haunted by any number of other spirits? I know there's probably 1,001 ghost stories about this particular temple. When I went on a tour, which was very small, 5 or 6 of us walked around, and we had a great time. And the temple is absolutely stunning. Did I have an experience there? I did not. But I'm sure there are plenty of people who have, and I'd be curious to hear some of those stories, if you have them. Next up, I'd like to read an excerpt from a piece that came from the Dallas Morning News. The article was called Witch Lady, Animal Sacrifices, and a Haunted Masonic Lodge are three of Plano's spookiest stories. Tales of ghosts and other strange happenings have been whispered throughout the city for years. So, we'll read the introduction and the part about Plano Masonic Lodge, number 768. Urban legends and whisperings of hauntings surround Plano, a city with a history that dates as far back as 1841. Like all stories about hauntings and urban legends, most of it is left to a person's perception or imagination. But since it's Halloween time, who doesn't love a good scary story? Here are three from the book Haunted Plano, Texas by author and freelance journalist Mary Jacobs, who's also a Dallas Morning News Special contributor. Plano Masonic Lodge, number 768. The Masonic Lodge, number 768, might be the most haunted old building in Plano, according to the book. The scary goings-on in the building includes the sound of heavy footsteps on a stairway, with no one present. Seats in the main room have mysteriously raised and lowered. These are two of the many strange experiences members of the lodge have reported, writes Jacob, who was also a contributor for the Dallas Morning News. Kevin Main, one of the members, has experienced the hauntings firsthand, according to the book. He believes the paranormal activity could be related to J.W. Shepherd, a Mason, one of the building's early founders and a prominent cattle rancher. The main meeting of the lodge, reserved for members only, features a candlelit altar, an original pressed tin ceiling, and a lighted letter G, which represents God and geometry, Jacob writes. A wall of portraits shows the lodge's past masters, most of them long dead, peering over the proceedings. The history of the Masons in Plano dates to 1860, according to the website. So just that first bit there, I thought was really interesting. Certainly, these are, I guess, kind of vanilla happenings that could be happening in any lodge, especially those with those seats that go up and down, and sometimes the ones that go up automatically. As an aside, have you guys ever been in lodge and then the master will gavel three times and everybody stands up, and then there's just like that cacophony of all of the seats like springing up and they're bouncing back and forth for a second? I always find that really funny, and I'm always conscious to sort of stand up and hold the seat as I go so that it doesn't do that. But anyway, on to our featured article, which is called A Candlelit Confession. And it was first published in the October 2022, Volume 2, Number 10, of the Lyceum, a publication at the time of the Illinois Committee on Masonic Education, which, by the way, may be coming back, likely under the WCY education banner, and we'll be publishing that independently. However, this again was featured in this particular issue, and you can find it on page number 7. Let's go ahead and take a look. So this was by, again, Right Worshipful Brother Chad Lasik, 33rd degree, who's a member on the Committee of Masonic Education. Each of us has heard at least one story, which we would never believe to be true except for the person telling it. There are precious few people in my life that I know would never deceive me. I will believe they are telling the truth no matter how incredible it sounds. The story I am about to share is from just such a person. I will not use his name because I did not have time to ask his permission before I submitted this writing. He and I served together at Marine Corps Air Station El Toro from 1995 to 1998. I was the best man at his wedding, and we're still dear friends these 24 years later. The details of how he came to tell me this story may sound contrived, as if I intended to make the scene more spooky. I assure you, I have not. As you will soon discover, this story does not require embellishment. My friend and I worked in a building at the base of an air traffic control tower situated at the intersection of the runways in the middle of the airbase. Our job was to monitor the radio and weather equipment during the night shift. The radio frequencies we supported were used by search and rescue and other emergency services, so they could never be left unattended. We slept on cots in this room in case an alarm sounded or a call was made. Our location and the time of day meant that we were always completely isolated. One late evening, a Southern California storm began to blow. It became so strong that we kicked the wooden block out from the foot of the door to our shop to stop the dust and debris from blowing in. The block was there because we were too lazy to type the code to unlock it every time we needed to enter. I pulled the bar, which ran the width of the steel door, latching it securely. Soon after, the power went out. There were generators at the transmitter and receiver stations situated in the hills around us, but our building was not serviced by them. We found a scented candle jar, which we used to light up a small area of the room more practically than a flashlight could. We then resumed our normal procedures as we would on any night. We played cards. On the occasions when there were four people on the crew, the game was spades. With just the two of us, it was gin rummy. It was now well after midnight, and the storm got steadily worse. The wind was getting all sorts of stones and debris and showering the steel door behind us. The combination of the noise, our isolation, and the effect of a single candle has in a large room made us both uneasy. We halted the game, as all our attention was drawn to that steel door, We sat in silence as we heard what genuinely sounded like something trying to claw its way in. I won't say that I was afraid, but I will admit to being spooked. In defiance of what I knew to be nothing but the wind and noise, I marched up to the door and kicked it open. Of course, there was nothing there, but dust and wind and all sorts of dry plant matter, which came flying in all around me. I pulled the door closed again, satisfied that I had banished any childish fear that occasioned the situation. When I turned to rejoin our small sphere of light, I could see the face of my friend. He was hunched forward with his forearms on his knees, his head turned upward. He said, "I could never be like you." I asked him what he meant, and he proceeded to confess that he has a paralyzing fear of the kind of bump-in-the-night sensations like the ones we just experienced. It's unheard of for a young, proud Marine to admit fear of any kind. To admit being paralyzed by the childish sort of fears associated with the monster under the bed is unthinkable. I resumed my place at the table and asked him why he was so afraid. The answer he gave is where the real story now begins. My friend, an only child, lived with his single mother in a house she rented in Nebraska. He lived in this place during the fourth and fifth years of his life. This house was designed with a staircase leading to a spacious, finished attic. The staircase was along one of the long sides of the room. On the short wall, at the front of the house, there was a large picture window. His bed was located on the opposite wall. This left him with a huge area to play and scatter toys about. The door of the staircase was directly against the bottom stair, it opening outward into a hallway near the kitchen. Shortly after they moved in, his mother was startled awake by a series of thumps, followed by a loud bang on the attic door. Opening it, she found her son, crumpled in a heap at the bottom of the stairs. She helped him back up into bed, likely assuming that he was unfamiliar with the new space as he searched for the bathroom or a drink of water. But it kept happening. Frustrated and afraid for his safety, she asked him why he kept falling down the stairs, and he replied, "I made the old lady mad." On another occasion, my friend wandered into his mother's room while she was getting ready. She had a wardrobe cabinet, the doors of which were swung open to either side with a metal bar that spanned the top to hang garments from. As he was chatting with his mother, he entered this cabinet and stretched his hands upward so he could hang from the bar. Both doors of the cabinet violently slammed shut. His mother jumped up to open them, but she couldn't. They were frozen shut. Panicked, she tried with all her might to beat the doors open, screaming to her silent child all the while. After a few terrifying moments, the force holding the doors abated, and she flung them open effortlessly. Her son was lying motionless on the floor of the cabinet, his face dark blue. Instinctively, she grabbed him by the ankles and shook him upside down. Out poured a steady stream of nuts, washers, bolts, and screws. This hardware rang loudly as it bounced around the bottom of the cabinet. Finally, she emptied his mouth of enough of the material that he could spit out the rest, and the color began to return to his face. When mother and son were sufficiently calmed down from the ordeal, she returned to her bedroom to examine the wardrobe. She collected a heaping handful of mismatched hardware, which was strewn across the floor. None of the fasteners were missing or even loose from the inside of the cabinet. The hinges, the door handles, and the brackets that hold the metal bar all were securely fastened. Turning to the doors, she confirmed what she already knew. There was no locking mechanism, no latch, no lever or catch or any such thing. The doors can't be locked. I asked my friend to tell me what happened in the attic. He said that late at night, after he had gone to bed, the ghostly figure of a very old woman would frequently appear. Her whole body floated in the air, a few feet above the ground. Her skin was deeply wrinkled and moldy. Her long gray hair was wild about her head and shoulders. She wore a filthy, tattered garment. It was a sort of nightgown. It had some modest decorative lacework around the collar, but was otherwise plain. Her bare feet hung down below the bottom of the garment, which was particularly shredded and darkly stained. The most terrifying feature of this specter was the expression on her face. Here was the look of limitless, all-consuming rage. She would circle around his large bedroom, making an oval path through the rectangular space. She drifted around and around in the same direction. At some point during her circuit, when she passed near his bed, she would snatch him out of it, sometimes by the scruff of his pajamas at his neck, at others by an arm or a leg, whatever she happened to catch hold of. She would continue in her path around the room with him in tow. She flailed him around like a rag doll as she went, banging him off the walls, the ceiling, and the floor as she drifted around the room. He would eventually be released at a place that would send him crashing down the stairs. It happened so often that Mom stopped investigating the noise. He would climb back up the stairs and return to bed. He developed the nightly strategy of rushing into his bed and as deep under the covers as he could get. He would then will himself to sleep as fast as he possibly could. This would not prevent him from being snatched out of bed, but it would spare him the agony of wondering if the old lady was coming that night. During one of his nightly routines, he was kept awake by a heavy thunderstorm. The sound of the rain against the roof directly above him and the crashes of thunder made sleep impossible. The large picture window on the opposite side of the room did not have a curtain. He lay with his back to that window, facing the wall adjacent to his bed. The lights from the streets below shone through the leaves and branches of a large tree in the front yard, the projected tangled web of chaotic shadows on the wall in front of him. With every blast of wind and flash of lightning, the figures on the wall thrashed frantically. Then he realized some of the shadows weren't moving. He could see the shadow made by the outline of his body as he lay in bed, and just above his elevated shoulder, right in front of him, he saw a stationary shadow of what looked like a young woman's face. But it was backward. The eyes, nostrils, and mouth were light, and the rest of her face was shadow. If you held a flashlight behind a mask and pointed it at the wall, you would create a similar image. The figure looked to be wearing a distinctive hat. It was the sort of starched, small box-shaped hat that a nurse would have worn years ago. As he stared into this hollow-eyed face, he tried to convince himself that it was caused by the tree branches. Then the shadow of a hand slowly rose up beside the face and waved at him. He pulled the covers over his head and clenched his eyes shut with all his might. Mercifully, he soon fell asleep. Many years later, as an adult, he asked his mother about that house they lived in. She asked him how much he remembered about it and was quite distressed when she learned just how much. She said that strange things started happening right after they moved in. Items would go missing or be moved around. There would be strange noises and devices would start and stop working inexplicably. She also mentioned that he fell down the stairs all the time. This activity increased to such an extent that one evening the door to the dishwasher flung open. The wire racks shot out, and all of the contents flew violently around the kitchen, shattering everything that could be smashed. The knives and forks or anything with a point stuck into the ceiling. She was grateful that the noise didn't wake him at the time, and she quickly cleaned up the mess so he wouldn't be frightened. She said her breaking point happened on a cool summer evening, about 1 year after they had arrived. She was sitting on the couch in the living room, watching a movie with a friend. The front door was open to let the night breeze in. There was a wooden screen door, which, when unlatched, allowed the wind to open it a little before the spring pulled it back. It made a loud rap, followed by two soft ones. And so this rhythmic sound continued over and over. It eventually became enough of a distraction that she decided to get up and close the door. She pulled the screen door shut, and then locked it with a hook and eye latch. She closed the main door and locked the deadbolt. As she started to turn away from the door, she heard the deadbolt unlock. She watched as the doorknob turned. The main door slowly opened to where it was before. The latch was lifted out of the eyelet, the handle of the screen door turned, and it resumed its... That was the last night they spent in that house. I personally find it hard to imagine that the resumption of a banging screen door was the straw that broke the camel's back. If I had to carry a stepladder into the kitchen to retrieve the forks and knives from the ceiling, I would be sharing my new mailing address with friends and family that same night. I thanked my friend for sharing his amazing yet traumatic story. I told him that I was interested in visiting that house someday if it still exists. He told me he would point it out to me, but that he will not go inside it for anything in this world. I don't blame him. I have one last piece of this story to share. Many years later, long after I'd left the military, I attended a dinner party. I was enjoying a conversation with a couple about my age, and the subject of the supernatural arose. I decided to share the part of the story involving the shadow face on the wall. When I described how the face looked like, a backlit mask, and that the figure wore an old-times nurse's hat, the blood ran out of the face of the lady I was talking with. Her head shot over to her husband. It turns out that he has seen that exact same face many times, and he told her all about it. And he did not see it with the eyes of a young boy whose facts might be dismissed as nothing but an overactive imagination. He was in his late teens and early 20s at the time. As you can imagine, our conversation lasted well into the night. Whatever this hollow-eyed entity is, I have no doubt that it dwells somewhere among us. If you're like me, you enjoy learning about other people's ghost stories, but you don't want one of your own. I hope that you and your family have a safe and spooky Halloween. All right. When I first read this, when we published it in the Lyceum, I was just going through it for some minor editing and things, and I will not lie to you. I mean, I got the chills all the time as I was going through this the first time. And, reading it for you here this week, it still gives me chills reading it. So, a very wild tale, and hey, you don't have to believe it, but you know what? Chad said that this was a Marine brother, somebody that he believes no matter what. Have I had any ghost stories? Well, on a couple occasions I have. And briefly I will tell you that when I was very young, I woke up to what looked like ghosts flying around my ceiling fan. I promptly hopped out of bed, ran to my mom's room, and got in her bed and fell asleep. And another time, when I was about 20 years old with my wife, she would have been about 19, we flew out to California, and we went to that same room where that ceiling fan was being circled by spooky spirits, or apparitions. And this was the same house, it was my grandmother's house. She had passed away in that house in between these two stories. My wife and I were laying in bed and discussing her grandmother, who at the time was also sick back in Illinois, and discussing her likelihood that she would not be able to continue the short vacation that we had planned in California, and that she would have to travel back to Illinois to be with her grandmother, because it was not looking good. And we had this lamp in the back room where we were. This lamp was a sort of dimmer lamp, right, where you have the lamp, and just underneath the lamp on the stalk of this, you know, floor lamp, there is a little brass knob, and you would turn it, and it would click as you turned it on, right? And when you clicked it on, it was at its brightest. And if you continued to turn the knob to the right, it would dim the light. And then if you turned it left, it would bring it back up to full brightness, and then if you continued to turn it, it would click off. The light itself was on, probably mid-brightness or so. The air conditioning was on in the back room, and there was no sort of power outage or anything, because the air conditioner never stopped. But the light dimmed, and then got super bright and turned off. And I thought, oh, that's strange. And I walked over to the light, and it had fully clicked off, meaning something had to have turned the mechanism all the way to the left and moving through what is somewhat a resistance to click it all the way off. And when I had mentioned that to my future wife, we promptly packed up two pillows and the comforter and walked into the living room and fell asleep on the floor. And you can take that to the bank. I later found out that that house had had numerous, well, strange things and apparitions that had been witnessed by not only me, but also my grandparents and my uncles who lived in that house as well. So, for what it's worth, something was definitely going bump in the night. What it is, I don't know. But that's it for this week. I hope you all have a happy and safe Halloween. And until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
Yeah.